Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, April 26, 2011. A few quick announcements. The main science topic tonight, I will be talking about the companies right now absconding or dividing up planetary resources. There's a company that was just formed this past week called Planetary Resources from the owners of Google. Cameron is another one, many investors with large cash availability putting money into these ventures to divide up space, the natural resources of space, and basically start to go out and take them. This has been the history of Western man, and it has been the absolute destruction of civilizations, everything in its path. If you start with the Spanish conquest of the Americas, you look at the absolute destruction without regard for anybody, any person, or anything. All justified. Isn't it good? So we have the latest where people who have become extremely rich off internet ventures, we're talking about Bill Gates, we're talking about Peter Diamantis, we're talking about other people, and let's set the record straight. Let me see, who else? I'll be naming off names. Eric Schmidt, Larry Page, James Cameron, the list goes on. Eric Anderson, and here's the part that gets me. Okay, people have money, they can do things, but here's the point I will be making on tonight's show. That they are teaming up with NASA and NASA resources to put companies together. Now, you, everybody out there listening, has put the money and the backing into NASA. And here's the point. Now, all of a sudden, these very rich people come in, form a company, and say, we want to mine the asteroids. Well, those guys don't. Bill Gates doesn't know which asteroid to go to and mine. They need the NASA guy. You see what I'm saying? I have known for a very long time that this was coming, and it is now at our doorstep, where companies, individuals, rich people would need the resources developed within NASA to go out and mine and to basically abscond with resources from outer space, to get there first. So with no thought of giving anything back to the people out there who paid the freight for NASA. Just by this guy, his name is Eric Anderson, former NASA Mars mission manager, has founded a company called Planetary Resource. And joining up with big money from people like Peter Diamantis, who did the XPRIZE, K. Ram Shriram. Let me see some of the other names I'm finding here. Anyway, we're talking about people putting money in, but as I say, these money people would not be able to do anything if it weren't for the knowledge that they can buy, that they can hook into within NASA. So NASA now, the guys in NASA can come out and hook up with people with money because they've got information. Well, gee, where did they get that information? They took a paycheck. They took a paycheck paid by everybody in this country. So literally everybody in this country has a right to this venture. In fact, you could make the point, that none of this would be possible, absolutely zero of this would be possible without the detailed information that comes out of NASA. Which asteroid to go to, what kind of technology is needed, all that information, just tremendous amounts of information that have been developed over the space program, the entire life of the space program, since really the 1940s when the space program really began, actually before that, all goes through these people. This is a public trust. Secondly, who owns outer space? Is it Peter Diamantis because he can put down the money to get there first and hire a NASA guy and bring him into his group, and all of a sudden they got a private corporation? Do they own the resource of outer space and cut everybody else out on the planet because they can get there first? They have this image of the king on the hill with all his glory and all his wealth and overlooking his land, and the cobbler at the base of the hill, this was the expression I heard one time, making his boots, and the all of the people growing food and the benefit of all of this coming up to the king. That's the way these people view themselves. But why are these people rich? Why is Bill Gates rich? Why are the people that Google rich? Well, because they sold out to the government. Remember, Bill Gates a number of years ago had a very heavy-duty lawsuit going against him. And it was over some real petty item, but the government was in there after him. They weren't after him for any real legitimate reason. Bill Gates was refusing to put backdoor software into his software for the government, to allow the government to be inside your computer without you knowing it, without anybody else knowing it. And so when you buy a Microsoft product, when you go on Google, when you go to Wikipedia, when you use Facebook, when you use Twitter, all of these people who have become billionaires over internet services, why are they billionaires? They're billionaires because the government was able to come in and buy them out. If you look at the chain of command of Facebook, it goes all the way up to the CIA. They get the pictures, and when you go on Facebook, and I hope the two people are smart enough to not be using Facebook out there, or Twitter, or going on Google, or using Wikipedia, or using Microsoft products, for that matter, there's a whole host of these, and as soon as they become popular, well used by the public, the government moves in. And when I talk about the government, I'm talking about basically New World Order forces, because the government in this country and around the world, basically, what you call the so-called free world, are controlled by banking interests from outside. And so there's an infinite amount of money, so these people who cooperate become fabulously wealthy. And gee, isn't that swell for those guys? But they are drawn into the New World Order. They are brought in as pawns, and they could be disposed of instantly, but they're ego people, they're easily used, and they like that money. Gee, they get to have ventures, they get to go out and form corporations and go into outer space. They get to throw their money around and be big shots. Bill Gates has a big telescope operation down in South America. Ooh, gee, Bill. He took over a government program that was fledgling, that wasn't succeeding, was lacking funding. Billy comes in with his billions and funds the telescope. Gee, he didn't fund any telescopes at the North Pole. Bill, what's your interest in astronomy? What does that have to do with Microsoft? Well, is it just because Bill is a great guy? Is it he's out there to help you? I doubt it. The end result of the Bill Gates lawsuit with the government was he folded. He gave in. He sold out so that everybody out there that uses Microsoft products or hooks into them, which is about everybody on the planet, allows the government backdoor into your lives. Yeah, simple as that. Bill Gates is rich because he sold out your rights to privacy. Very simple. Okay, so now Billy gets to go down and have... how does Bill get into a government facility and end up funding it? You see? It's all the good old boys having fun. Just having some good old Southern fun. With their money, became billionaires because they sold out, and your privacy is what got them to be billionaires. Let's just say it the way it is. Okay, so anyway, that's a major topic. Before I go into a lot of detail on that, And this crosses over into water control. That's something that's major, major in the news right now, is the control of water. The water rights around the world are being purchased. I've talked in the past. Right now I have an effort going on with the corn being sold, and I hope you all have partaken in the corn seed that's available on my page, and that is meant to destroy. It's what I can do to destroy Monsanto, Cargill, and the other major seed corporations. And yes, it is Monsanto. If you don't believe me, take a trip to Molokai sometime, the island in Hawaii, and see the operation where Monsanto came in, took over the island's water supply. The people don't have any access to it, and that's one of the locations on Earth where they grow their seed corn. And you can't go near it. It's militant. It's the and what's funny, there's no corn to eat there. It's all seed corn. They're growing vast amounts. Okay, that's just one example. But the corn that I'm selling is a direct front. And right now, it's all over the world, and people are growing it successfully. And it assures the sustenance of that strain of corn. Right now, the corn sale will still go on through probably mid-May. So if you haven't gotten into that, order your corn immediately. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and order corn. If you don't plant, if you don't have a place to plant it, find somebody that does. I don't care if they live across the country. Buy it and send it to them. Make sure that the seed comes with instructions, everything you need to know, how to plant the seed, how to take care of it, and how to harvest and save your seeds so you have the seeds for next generations. This is a non-hybrid. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that. I spent a lot of time last week, listen to last week's show, the archive. All my shows are archived, by the way, on my webpage. Going back for at least 10 years, so a lot of information there. But last week's show, I discussed the corn, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this week's show because I have so many important topics to cover. In terms of solar weather, we have been seeing auroras all over the United States, as far south as Colorado over past days, and that may continue yet tonight. So if you can go out. And these auroras come and go throughout the night. They will cycle up to peak, and then they'll drop off. So if you go out and you don't see any, if you have a clear sky, of course, and you don't see any, go back in an hour or 2 hours and look. Because tonight there could be, very well could be, some big auroras. But the past week, we're still getting a lot of solar activity, and people are wondering about this. It's very simply this. We are heading into a solar cycle. It's normal for the sun to be active, but it appears the sun is a little more active than normal, especially after we're coming out of a period of 3 years, record period, without any sunspots. All of a sudden, the sun is kicking off, and we're in uncharted territory as far as the sun is concerned. We don't know where it's going. The computer models only predict based on certain factors. It's very primitive prediction, so it's safe to say that nobody can predict where the sun is going. Plus, we've had all those comets coming in from the south and interacting with the sun, something, of course, that standard science does not acknowledge. They're trying as hard as they can to keep the public from talking about that. Okay, a little note here, a meteor, not just a little one, but a pretty big one, it's estimated to be the size of a minivan, came in over California, and I love the NASA twist in the news. Meteors usually land over the ocean, but this one came and sprayed all over, broke apart. Had a big explosion, broke apart into a million pieces, and sprayed a little town over in Central California. NASA comes in, and before they're even there, they go, oh, these are billions of years old. And so the first guy to find a piece, he goes, oh, my goodness, I'm so proud of finding this piece that's billions of years old, and And this could lead to information about how our very planet formed. The sing-song nursery rhyme, you know, NASA hasn't even seen these, they haven't studied them, but they go, oh, that's the very old kind of the 4.5 billion years ago kind. You see how absurd this is? There's no study, there's no looking at it, they didn't even look at these. They just said, oh yeah, they took a superficial glance and said, oh, 4.5 billion years old. That just shows you how absurdly ridiculous science is today, but how much they have to train on this idea of billions of years old, that something that came into our soul, into our planetary atmosphere had to be billions of years old. So ludicrous, but very interesting. I guess the search is on. Everybody and their brother is out there, including NASA, looking all over for pieces of this asteroid. And so apparently it's a typical asteroid, carbonaceous chondrite. And there's the one it's analysis that I saw said it was possibly a Leonid meteor, but there again, they really don't know where this thing came from. So they really don't know, other than it came into the atmosphere. Okay, on to the next topic. I'm going to do a quick financial analysis here, and this is, goes back to talking about the real price of goods, something I've been covering, analysis of where does the money go, what is the real price of goods. Once I gave an analysis of a coconut. A guy is in the on a tropical island, there's other people there, and he's the guy, he goes up and he's got a knack for getting coconuts. There's another guy who goes out and fishes, and he gets fish, but pretty much the people gather for themselves. Well, one day the guy with the coconuts goes, you know, I'm pretty good at getting coconuts. I think I'll start to sell them. So he starts to trade with the guy who catches fish, and there's somebody else who raises some crops. So they start trading. And so the guy who is trading the coconuts, he decides that, well, if he just got more coconuts, he could do much better. So he gets a few people to work for him. Okay, now the coconuts have a price. The coconut is no longer worth what it was before because he's got workers there, and he's still got to make a profit, so he gets lots of coconuts, and he becomes the coconut guy on the island. And here's the point. In that very simple economic model, what's happening to the coconut? Well, the coconut is the coconut. It, you know, it's there. And but what's happening is that the value of the coconut has to increase, the selling value of the coconut has to increase because he's got to pay these other workers somehow. Okay, so at any rate, that simple example brings me to a modern day example of the real cost of goods. So I'm going to take an example of something that costs $100. You go to the store, and whatever it is, or it could be a conglomerate of things that you buy at a grocery store or whatever store you go to. Okay, so let's take, just to use round numbers, this item or the group of items costs $100. Let's break that $100 down. On the retail sale of it, the retailer is going to pay, okay, now the retailer is going to get 20 to 40% or $20 to $40. 30 or 40% of that is going to go to taxes on the business. Okay, the retailer also is probably involved in interest, paying interest on his debt used to manage and grow the business. Most businesses cannot grow to become big unless they have investment. Well, the return on that investment either goes back to investors or a bank or whoever. That can be as much as 60 to 80% of the profit. Transportation. Okay, all those goods had to be transported to the locale where you got it. They came from the original source. If there was manufacturing, that took energy. Okay, so what we're talking about here is all the energy pieces, components that went into making that product and getting it to the shelf where you can buy it. The packaging, the woods that had to be cut to make the boxes, the paper, the information, all of that requires energy and transportation. But when you have energy companies that control the government and can charge any price they want, then that becomes a big factor. The retail, and then insurance, of course, we have insurance, but that generally is relatively small, a small percentage of the total. Okay, so at any rate, then if you take the wholesale cost, which is the other, let's say, 60% of the cost that you are paying, the wholesale cost then is broken down into manufacturing, and the profit, what I'm looking at here is the profit made by the wholesaler. And but the breakdown of the wholesale cost is very much similar to the retail cost. The taxation on the company, the interest on debt, whether it's to investors or whether it is to banks or whatever, and then the transportation energy cost. Now, what I'm going to do is, just like the coconut, I'm going to break this down. And so of your $100 purchase, how much really goes for that product? And you got to give the retailer something. He deserves it, and the wholesale person. But how much of this goes to taxation, interest on debt, and transportation? Just those three items. And it turns out that the 20% of 60% is actually what the wholesaler gets, and this is a real cost. This is not attributable to taxation, interest on debt, and transportation, energy costs. 20% of the 60% that the wholesaler gets out of the $100. So we're talking 20% times 60% gives you $12. This is the actual wholesale value of the product that you'd purchase for $100, or the group of products. Now let's look at the retailer. The retailer gets 20% of the 40%. That is not the rest is attributable to taxation, interest on debt, and transportation, energy. So we're talking 20% of 40%, or that's 0.2 times 0.4 is equal to 0.8. And that then is $8. So you add the wholesale to the retail, that's $20. So, okay, go back to the coconut example. The coconut, remember, had to increase in value, selling value. The coconut didn't increase. It didn't change. It's still a coconut. But now you had to add value to that coconut to pay for other things. Well, labor, of course, is a legitimate cost. But what if all of a sudden the coconut salesman, the government comes in and says, we're going to tax you on everything you sell. And then the bank comes in and says, well, we're going to help you increase your business. We're going to invest so you have a nicer building. You have a better facility to hold your coconuts or whatever you need, so you can expand. And then the energy company comes in and says, well, of course, you're using our energy to now you have machines that get the coconuts, but we're going to charge you extravagant, unreasonable rates for the energy you need to get your coconuts. Now the coconut is paying for a lot more than just the couple workers who've been getting the coconuts and moving them. They're paying for all kinds of what I call leech organizations that are sucking value out of the enterprise. Okay, so let's go back to this. So given that an allowable amount for those three other entities, taxation, interest on debt, transportation, and including energy, let's give that a 10% where it should be, not 80%. Okay, your product should cost $30. End of lesson. So you're seeing that 70% of the cost of your item goes to banks, government, transportation, and energy. Now let's take the person who, let's take the retailer and the wholesaler, they take the money that they get and they go home And they have to live on this, and they have to pay for goods and services. When they pay for their home, they are living under an amortization schedule, and they're paying 90 to 95% interest on their home. Look at an amortization schedule if you don't understand what I'm saying. Communication and utilities are other costs, and automobile. Okay, so when you take these and you look at the energy costs, for example, to make a car, to make the products that go into a house, or the interest on these, that's a huge factor in today's world. Okay, so now you take this and put it all together. If you took out the leech organizations out of this equation, your house, you would make a lot less when you worked, but your house would only cost $30,000. Your car would cost $4,000. The food that you bought would only cost pennies, because that's all that the food is worth. Really, if you take off the major these other, what I call, leech costs in the products. And so anyway, okay, end of lesson, Economics 101. And by the way, you won't learn that in a college course, that these are, in fact, what they teach there is these are all essential services. Well, no, in a real economic, in real capitalism, then you don't have those leeches. You have free enterprise. We don't ever mistake it. We don't have free enterprise in this country. We have a game of Monopoly, and the winners have won, and everybody else has lost. Okay, enough of that. Okay, on to a couple other topics. A listener wrote in. I always love listener questions, because if one person is asking, many people would be asking the same question. A listener is asking, why are comets dark when they come into the solar system and then they explode into brightness? That's a great question. And one of the points is that some comets explode into brightness way out in the far reaches of the solar system. And if you remember, standard science tries to tell you that they're little snowy ice balls. Well, in the far reaches of the solar system, there is not enough solar energy to, it's like the sun looks like a flashlight, a very dim flashlight. It looks like another star out there. There's not enough solar energy to do anything. Okay, so why do comets light up? Well, the real reason is that comets come in and they discharge the solar capacitor. And, okay, the nucleus of the comet is coming in, or possibly it's already in the far reaches of the solar system. It's going out. It goes, it kind of sits out there and moves in a lateral direction, and it starts to come in. And as it moves in, as it moves faster and faster, it starts to discharge the solar capacitor. At some point, it's kind of a breakaway process where it all of a sudden avalanches and becomes big, and that's when the comet snaps or explodes into brightness. So explode is kind of an adjective here. It doesn't mean that the comet literally explodes. The comet brightens greatly all at one time. So that's a great question, and it really brings out one of the main points of my plasma discharge comet model, because it shows how comets in the far reaches of the solar system can brighten very greatly and become very bright comets very quickly. Whereas if you had a little snowball out there, it shouldn't be doing anything. Great counterexamples also are the moons of Jupiter and the icy moons of Saturn. These moons are out in the solar wind. Why aren't they giant comets? Well, the real reason is because the dirty snowball comet model doesn't work. For 80 reasons to Sunday, it doesn't work. But they have to keep pounding on that, because if people really understood that comets were electrical, they could be big. This thing coming in over California could be much bigger or whatever, or maybe it wouldn't hit the atmosphere but just come by, something great big. It leads to all kinds of questions, including the question, if if the space is outer space is electrical, can't we go out and grab a piece of that to drive our economy and get rid of oil, big oil, and nuclear energy, which is obviously an absolute disaster waiting? It's already happening in all the rest of the hundreds and hundreds of nuclear sites around the world in the nuclear waste. A lot of this nuclear waste you have to continue to cool. If you don't, they're going to melt down those containers and expose the atmosphere to radiation that will last millions of years. Nuclear energy is something that they should have simply said no from the very beginning. We are not going to cross that. We're not going to let that genie out of the bottle. But they did, and it became a very big economic factor. And countries like Japan bought it hook, line, and sinker because Japan doesn't have energy. And there again, Japan, being right off the South China Sea, would be an ideal place for Tesla energy coming from the ionosphere, tapping into that external energy source. But again, it's hard to sell free energy, isn't it? Energy that comes in for free. And don't mistake this with the term free energy that you see on the internet, where you build a box and all of a sudden this energy starts coming in and you can put a spark, you can put a power cord into it. No. Energy comes from somewhere. And this energy I'm talking about is coming from the sun, the solar capacitor. So you see why they can't talk about dirty snowballs, anything other than dirty snowballs, because it leads to too many questions. It also leads to the concept of Planet X and pole shifts. What causes these? The Earth just doesn't jump up and have a pole shift by itself. Something causes this, but they can't admit that. They have all kinds of scientists that work for the government trying to come up with 80 reasons to Sunday why the Earth does all this stuff, mountain building, sea levels rising. Gee, the Earth just decided to have 300-foot rise in sea levels one day, or the oceans of Mars just decided to leave one day. No. Things happen for a reason. These are big events, and it took big things to cause these. So at any rate, just getting a little bit off track, but a great question from a listener, and I love listener questions because it shows their thinking. And it, like I always used to say in the classroom when I was in, say, teaching astronomy in the university level, a student would ask a question. And a lot of times they'd say, you know, I've been thinking about this, and I think it's really a stupid question because I missed a lesson or something. And I'd always tell them, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Because if you're thinking it, there's probably 10 other people out there that are wondering the same thing. So please ask your questions. That's important. And it also leads into a lot of other topics that help explain a lot of other concepts. Oh, I just wanted to mention about the corn. I didn't make it very specific, but you can plant the corn. This is 100-day corn, it's called. It takes 100 days to mature and finish growing, let's put it that way. So 100-day corn. So if you planted it as late as the end of May, you would still be good. You'd be June, July, August, and then 10 days into September. And that's about the time when it's starting to get drier, so you're starting to get into the cooler nights. Corn needs 100 days, and we've had a rather cool spring in many places. So you really wouldn't have wanted to plant the corn quite yet. Some people may have, and it possibly will work out, but corn needs 70-degree weather. It's a warm weather crop, remember. We grow it a lot in the northern climates. But the point is, there's still time to get the corn and get it to someone or plant it yourself. So I would say that we're going to run the corn offer well into mid-May, probably into the third week of May. So, but that doesn't mean it's going to last in terms of availability. I don't know when it might sell out. So if you're interested, and by the way, this is your chance, this is your ability to take Monsanto to the cleaners and Cargill and all the other seed corporations with their Frankenstein corn seed. It's your chance to get the seed and move it, and one little package of 200 seeds is enough to propagate this seed all over the world. So a package of 2,000 or 5,000 is going to do a lot of good to move this corn out into the world where it's going to propagate. And let me tell you once again what's going to happen. If we ever have an international disaster, say that we have a solar flare and the electric grid goes out, these companies will cease to function because they depend 100% on automation, on large-scale production, etc. That's all going to come to an end, and their seed that they're selling is going to come to an end after 1 year. And let me define that. If you took seed from a Monsanto piece of corn and planted it, yeah, it'll grow something. And it'll grow, but it won't be what you want to grow. So in that sense, no, you can't get the product that you think you're going to get. After a generation or two at most, it would become something you wouldn't even recognize as corn. The genetics are such that it breaks down. It's meant to break down so that you have to go back and buy their seed next year. So at any rate, the corn seed that I'm selling is old-fashioned corn. You can save the seeds and grow it year after year, give that seed to other persons, and it'll propagate. So if we ever do have a major disaster, Monsanto and all its Frankenstein seed will go away, and this corn seed will live on. It could feed millions of people in times of emergency. You can sprout it, you can grind it, knead it, you can feed it to animals. It's a very important, it's the third most important grain in the world. So I hope you feel, you can understand why I feel strongly about this. But as I said, it's still available. If you're thinking about getting the corn seed, do it now. Okay, I'm not going to spend more time on this show about that. But just go to the webpage. Okay, on to the next topic. Okay, just a quick announcement here. This somebody sent in. It's search on whatever search engine you use. Search for NASA's Perpetual Ocean. And I want to bring this to your attention because it's a NASA video of the ocean currents around the world, and it's an amazing thing to watch, so I want you to make sure you see this. It's called NASA's Perpetual Ocean. And in the beginning of this video, by the way, this is a depiction of the world ocean currents from June of 2005 to December of 2007. At the very beginning of this video, it shows the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic Ocean, and the currents down to South America and up all the way to England. It's got a view of the Earth. And what you very clearly see is what we call, or called, the Gulf Current. It comes up along from the Yucatan Peninsula. It winds around into the Gulf of Mexico. In the central part of the Gulf of Mexico, there's it looks like an eddy current. It's like a rotational current. The Gulf Stream picks up that warm water out of the warm Gulf waters, heads around down below the southern tip of Florida, and then heads up the eastern coast of the United States out into the Atlantic, and heads up towards the British Isles, Ireland, and up to Scandinavia, and where it would warm those areas, bringing that warm water up there to warm those areas. After the BP oil spill, scientists in Russia first noticed that circulatory pattern in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico ceased circulating, which blocked and stopped the northern flowing Gulf Stream. Now, in this video, you can see how the Gulf Stream used to be. Now, when you watch this, just understand that today, in 2012, the Gulf Stream no longer exists. It was by a major malfunction of mankind, and the greed of corporations and the ineptitude of the President of the United States to not get in there and clean it up and block it and cap it right away, remember that I gave a system for capping that, to put an upside down funnel down on there and to actually harvest that oil. But the problem was, of course, that so much oil was coming out of there. If they did that, they would have ship after ship after ship there lined up to extract that oil, and it would have ruined the world oil prices. It would have destroyed, it would have brought the oil prices down to zero from that one runaway well down there. But they couldn't let that happen, so they let it run and run and run, which is, it still is doing today. The reports in last week of shrimp from the Gulf of Mexico without any eyes. The animals there dying off. The Gulf of Mexico is basically dying, and this will move out into the other parts of the world. What a mess this world has become of greed, corporate greed. Okay, so at any rate, I want you to see this. Don't Google search. Excuse my bad language there. But use a search engine. Search for NASA's Perpetual Ocean. And at the very beginning, like I say, look for that Gulf Stream as it goes up through the Gulf of Mexico, wraps around the southern tip of Florida, and then up east, northeast. That stream is no longer working because the video is up to 2007. So anyway, it's a great example of some technology, but in, of course, in the video, they don't talk about that. So at any rate, a little announcement there, something for you to do when you're... if you can't sleep at night. Okay, on to the main science topic. We are going to have a severe water shortage in the future because of the absolute mismanagement of water today. For example, if you go out to Colorado, you can see this from the air, or if you're on a road, you can see the farms out there with these big circular sprayers spraying the crops out there, mainly corn. And they're extracting the water from the Ogallala Reservoir, which extends down into that northeast sector of Colorado. A guy named T. Boone Pickens has bought a ranch up in that area and is pumping water out like Johnny B. Good and selling it. And his motivation is that, well, if I can get a corner on water and people will pay for it, I can make a lot of money. That's the T. Boone Pickens philosophy. Say he owns water rights in Texas, and they're very militant about this. So at any rate, we are going to have a water shortage. China is already depleted, has already depleted its underwater resources, reservoirs, to where they've gone down deeper and deeper and deeper, and literally cannot go any deeper, using the water for agriculture in the most inefficient way possibly imaginable, by spraying it in the air. Now, if you have a cornfield at what they call a canopy, where the corn is completely canopied out and you can't even see the ground, most of that water evaporates away and doesn't do a bit of good for the corn. Just a little bit of drip irrigation to each plant or into those rows would use a millionth of the percentage of water and would more effectively water the plants. But nobody's going in and screaming and saying, you can't do this anymore, you can't take this water. But the Ogallala Reservoir, that is mainly in Nebraska and in the Dakotas and goes all the way up into Canada, is being depleted at a tremendous rate. Remember, Oklahoma and Texas are just getting out of a drought. And the water rights down there, people are buying the water rights. Monsanto is buying the water rights around the world. Here's an article that just came in from, this is nationofchange.org. It says, $4 a gallon for water. The dream of Monsanto and other corporations wanting to privatize water. And it talks about T. Boone Pickens, Royal Dutch Shell, Nestle, are all buying up water rights. Well, who are they buying water rights from? Who has the right to this? You're finding in foreign countries. In Paraguay, the Bushes have purchased a major holding of land over the largest, one of the largest aquifers in the world. Gee, you know, and this is one of the things that I have to say about scientists. They go out and they earn their paycheck, and they get this information, then they turn it over to these people who have money, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, if we buy up the water rights, we can keep it from people and make a lot of money, and we'll have power over people. That's the mentality of, but the scientists, these people would be nothing if it weren't for scientists. And so just one of my big complaints about scientists is they have no ethics. They take their paycheck. I had somebody tell me the other day who worked in some of the let's call them the think tank type operations. They say many, many people that work in there, scientists, engineers, etc., complain about their employer, complain about the work, but you know what? They take their paycheck, check, they shut up, and they go on and do their job. One thing I want to tell people is if you're working for the government, that is not a job. Working for the government is not a job. I got a kick out of the newspaper here the other day. I think it was USA Today. They said they were talking about the increase in jobs by government jobs offsetting private industry. And I thought to myself, government jobs, that's not a job. That's part of the black hole. That's part of the consumption of the few people that are left actually working real jobs. If you work, you know, and that's the one of the problems also. These are supposed to be side support jobs, and now they're becoming the main source of employment. But unfortunately, this is the basis of becoming a fascist state, when the majority of employment is for the government, because people tend to do their job and they can write it off as just, oh, I'm just doing my job, when they're destroying the livelihood and the country that they live in. It's just incredible. One of the most common expressions after World War II Germany was that, oh, the people were just doing their jobs, you know, that they weren't responsible for anything. Well, collectively and individually, they're responsible for everything that happened there. But the point is, in my book, The Diamond Principle, I talk about the natural way of living, what nature has in store for us. And the reality is, on Earth, we have vast resources, including water resources. They're simply mismanaged. There's enough for everybody to go around, but when you have people that come in the middle, and this goes back to the coconut example at the beginning of the show, water is an essential necessity of everybody on this planet for hygiene, for drinking, for cooking, for agriculture. But when individuals or individual corporations get in the middle and then start eyeing it up for profit and control, whoa, we're heading in, we're cruising for a bruising. And who gave the governments the right to distribute these resources? Okay, now let's go out into outer space. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I knew this would come at some point, and it was announced this past week. It's a company called Planetary Resources, and this is just one of the first ones to come along. And I want to read from their webpage here, and I want to read this, and then we'll analyze what they're really saying. Planetary Resources, it's called Planetary Resources, plural, .com. It says, redefining natural resources. Well, let me see, how do you redefine natural resources? Says Planetary Resources, the company, is establishing a new paradigm for resource discovery and utilization that will bring the solar system into humanity's sphere of influence. Our technical principals boast extensive experience in all phases of robotic space missions, from designing and building to testing and operating. We are comprised of visionaries, pioneers, rocket scientists, and industry leaders with proven track records on and off this planet. Okay, that sounds pretty good. But what do we have here? We've got some rich guys who got their money by selling out your privacy to the government. Now they can hook into the government. Where did they get this technical expertise for robotic missions, from designing and building, testing and operating? They didn't do it. This is all coming out of NASA. Stuff that you paid for, and these guys are getting it for basically incorporating. Well, see, the other flip side of this is with government funding dropping in the science world, now these guys are out there scratching for money. And so isn't it sweet that they can hook up with guys with big bucks that got their big bucks by selling out your privacy? Now they can hook up with NASA, pioneers, rocket scientists, industry leaders, proven track records. Well, where did they get the proven track record? You paid for it. You paid for it through NASA. Peter Diamandis doesn't have any track record. He's got money. He can buy things. Just like China bought the technology from Russia for rocketry, for all kinds of space technology. China simply bought it from Russia, including docking technology. China just bought it. Now, like these guys, Diamandis, Page, etc., by throwing their big money into government programs, Bill Gates with his telescope down south, and what other items that these people can just buy because they have money. Now the government scientists, because they don't have the wherewithal to go out and make money themselves and do their scientific projects, hook up with these guys with money. Now you have people with money with no ability hooking up with NASA scientists with basically knowing where to draw the technology and expertise out of NASA. How would Peter Diamandis, how would Page, how would Bill Gates, how would any of these people know which asteroid to go to or how to get there or how to build a spacecraft if they didn't just put the money down on the table and buy that? They don't have any expertise. They're buying it out of NASA. And my point is that you and every one of you own the resources in outer space, and you own the resources of NASA. This is part of the public trust. And once again, NASA is selling this out, turning the other way, because whenever I read magazines, whether it's Physics Today or whether it's aerospace, aviation magazines or whatever it is, their main interest is, where's the money? Where's the money coming from? Oh, funding is good. Increase in funding is good. Oh, now we're going to vote for this president because he's going to increase our funding. I hate to say it, but scientists today are prostitutes. They are prostitutes with their skills, with their livelihood, and they just are selling their abilities for the dollar. That's all it is. Now we have, none of them are asking who's going to control these resources. How is this going to further enslave the population of Earth? How is this going to take away the birthright of every person on this planet and give it to a few rich people and start the monopoly game in outer space with the winners already defined before it even gets going? But let me put another factor in this equation. Remember that two of the primary things that the bankers need to keep control of the world. They control the banks and the governments of 148 nations in this world. They control the UN. People a lot of times try and blame one organization or the other, or a political party, or if this party were in there, it would be better or whatever. No, these are all controlled by the same entities. What do they need? They need information. They need technology. They need control. Those are the things they need. And how do they do it? They wouldn't have any of this if it weren't for engineers and scientists producing the technology, producing the ability to go into your computer. The Bill Gates who sell software so that everybody's computer needs that software, but also the government can get in at any time. And by the way, that's how hackers get into your computer. They use the same backdoor as the government requires the software companies to put into the software so they can look at your life and keep track of you and find out who is a dissenter and who's marching with the party line. So let me summarize here. Space is not for personal profit. Where do these people get off starting a company and eyeing up resources in outer space? The name of the company says it all, Planetary Resources. They are looking at dividing up space. And by the way, if you don't play the game right, if you're in a development organization and you attempt to build a project to go into outer space, you will be blocked by the FAA, by 100 other methods, and your project will not succeed. Why is that? Because the government only allows their boys, the people that play the game, the Diamantises, the Pages, the Camerons, the people with big money that can get in there, the Bill Gates, that have the money to put down, and they'll play the game. They'll play the game. And the second thing is the use of NASA resources paid for with public money for the profit of a few. We are heading into some times here. Look at what's going on. Literally, it's the division or the absconding of resources, not only on this planet, but now in outer space, by the ultra rich. This all happening while the average person is losing their home, the very place they live. The banks are basically, due to bank fraud, causing the interest. And by the way, all of the early leaders of this country, when it was formed, they said, beware of the foreign banks, because through inflation, deflation, and interest, they will steal the housing and the very livelihood so that you won't be able to buy your own house. And that's exactly what's going on right now. So the banks literally in collusion to destroy the American population. I talked quite a bit over past weeks about the Mexican population explosion in this country. Right now there are Supreme Court actions trying to decide if it's legal for states to enforce immigration laws. That's a big part of this too. We're talking about resources. We're talking about large populations coming in and having large numbers of babies. Look at the problems of Mexico, the drug cartels, the control, the violence. A lot of these people can't go back there. They don't want to go back there. There's nothing for them. Based on 50 years of bad Latin American policy by the U.S., they are forced into situations that are unlivable. So they are here illegally just trying to scrape out a living, just trying to exist in a banker world. I am out of time. I suggest you go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, buy the corn, distribute it, and we'll see you next week. James McCanny, this is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.